I was again reminded this week, how much effort it takes just to prepare for a morning like this. So I know everyone's busy. Everyone has lots of life events happening, family life. Just a comment that was made in our house, and I'm just sharing this just so we understand what our pastoral team goes through every week, I'll say. Yesterday, I spent most of the day sitting in front of my computer trying to finalize my preparation or my notes for this morning. A certain someone, I'm not going to say names, but a little boy came up. Sorry, I'm going to back this up. Not a little, a boy came up to me and said, "Man, I'm glad you're not a regular pastor." He said, "I would never get to spend time with you." So that's just I say that in saying our pastorals team spends a lot of time and work on our church family. So thank you for that. But I also want to put a little plug in here that as a church family, it's not just a pastoral team. It's each one of us as a body and a church family that we can participate. We can share the load. We can help out where we can. I work in a industry that uptime and utilization is measured every day, right? And that doesn't happen without regular maintenance, making sure the machine is running properly, making sure everything is working well. And I say that because I want to encourage us to check in with our team, ask them how they're doing. Don't just want them to come to you saying, "How are you doing?" Right? It works both ways. So I want to encourage you to spend time interacting, asking the team how you can help them and support them. So I want to transition to the actual sermon text this morning. So another good morning and welcome here. It's good to be here. I want to welcome and acknowledge Haley Martin. It's good to see you back. I just pray that you could, the transition from working in Jamaica Relief Ministries could go well, from coming back to Ontario, adjusting to the culture, that could go well in the next couple weeks. So this morning we're picking up in Matthew 6. Kyle's been working through the Sermon on the Mount with us. In the section of verses that we're at right now, last Sunday and this Sunday, this Sunday's text is a continuation from where Kyle was teaching last week. Jesus' intentions, or Jesus getting to the point of how we are interacting with... Sorry, I got to regroup here a little bit. In this section of verses, Jesus is teaching us about how we interact, but more importantly, he is talking about our relationships and our attitudes towards the world that we live in. Verse 22 through 24, which is our text this morning, is a continuation from what Kyle shared last week. Last week, we looked at the treasure and your heart. This week, we're going to look at the lamp and light and the serving of masters. It's kind of a quick, the 3 points there. If I were to kind of summarize and ask what we're looking at, I labeled it as the problem. Just like the people in Jesus' audience that day, we as well today have a disoriented spiritual view of the world, power, our possessions, and our eternal focus. Just like that audience in Jesus' day, we are the same. We know who God is, but it's how we view and interact with the world, our possessions, that Jesus is teaching us here. What I'm going to ask later on is, what am I focusing on today? We all want to be whole and complete in Christ, and that comes by one thing. The light of the world is Jesus. This is the gospel message. The gospel is the only way to have a solution to this problem. And we'll get into that a little bit later. So, as I mentioned, the main text this morning is coming from Matthew 6, 22 to 24. And I ask that you stand, and we're going to read Matthew 6. But I'm going to start back at verse 19 and read through the end of 24. So I'm including the text that we looked at last week. So let's begin it. at verse 19 of Matthew 6. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. Verse 22, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be filled with darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Verse 24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. You can be seated. So what I'm going to do this morning, I'm going to start by breaking down a couple of the comments. There's a term eye, there's a term lamp, there's a term body in the first phrase there of verse 22. The eye term here is similar to a heart in Jewish literature. Let's connect this back to verse 21 of Kyle's text last week. It says, where your treasure is, that is where your heart is. What are you focusing on is what your heart is coming from your heart. So in this text, your eye equals your heart is what I have written down here. Next, the lamp. The lamp in this context, Jesus is using the lamp as a metaphor. Think of a lamp. Thinking of the term lamp gives you the thought of something that is producing or giving off light to the area around it. Like all sources of light, it needs to have a source of energy to produce light. Maybe it's a kerosene lamp. You think of a kerosene lamp. Maybe it's a solar lamp. You need the sun to power it. Maybe it just needs a set of AA batteries. But regardless of what your lamp is, it needs a source of energy. The lamp in this context is being fueled by our hearts. It's what's in our hearts is the energy that comes out in our lamp. What you are focused on will be the fuel that lamps your life today. It first illuminates our inward body, and secondly, what is in our hearts will shine out in our lives to families, to our families, to our friends, our coworkers, our community. Lamp is the reflection of what's in the heart in this context. The body, Jesus is not talking about our physical body here. It's our actions, our desires, our life. Body is our life. What is on display? What are we doing each day? The eye is the lamp of the body. What you focus on shapes and controls your entire life. Just like a light, a lamp lights a room, your spiritual focus lights your life. If I were following Vic's new SOP, which SOP stands for Standard Operating Procedures, this is where I would have a PowerPoint, but I'm not following Vic's new SOP standards for sermon teaching, so maybe someday, I don't know. So what I would have on a PowerPoint right now is eye equals heart, lamp equals reflection of heart, and body is our life. So I just want you to think of that as we go through here. Next, I want to look at where Jesus is teaching in the end of verse 22 and 23, where he talks about a healthy eye versus a bad eye. And I want to break that down a little bit here so we understand what that is about. A healthy eye, this means whole and generous. And I've got, I did a lot of different reading and I collected my thoughts through a lot of different sources, but the meaning of a healthy eye, the meaning of whole and generous, I took that from the Bible Project as well as Jonathan Pennington. They both kind of really explained what that meaning is in this context of what Jesus is teaching. The Greek word of this or meaning of healthy implies generous as well. If you could turn to Deuteronomy 15, verses 7 to 10. And we're just going to talk through that a little bit. Deuteronomy 15, 7 to 10. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but I want to point out a couple things here. The book of Deuteronomy is Moses preaching to all of Israel nearing the end of his life. These verses are God's message to them. What Jesus and Moses both are teaching highlights our attitude towards our earthly wealth. I'm not necessarily going to go through and read the verses here in 7 through 10, but just you can skim over them a little bit. And I should also mention that some of my points this morning, I'm kind of leaving open-ended. I'm not answering everything I'm asking. And the purpose for that is I want to create questions in your mind. I want you to leave here thinking, what does Jesus want from me? What am I supposed to be doing? I'm not here trying to tell you exactly what you need to do. I'm here to encourage you to dig into God's word and read and discover for yourself what Jesus is trying to teach us here in the Sermon on the Mount. So if you look at verse 7, it talks about, Moses is talking about the Israelites, and when there's poor people around them, when people come across hard times, don't harden your hearts, he mentions, or shut your hands against your brother, lend to them. He's talking about taking care of other people. Also, if you look later in, later in these chapters, it also talks about every 7 years debt was reset in their culture and their time. So what Jesus is also, or Moses is also teaching them is don't look at that and be like, oh, well, next year the debt's going to reset. I'm not going to borrow someone money because it's going to get reset. God is telling us don't do that because he's going to look out for us if we give and help generously without having an ulterior motive. My point here is what is our attitude towards earthly wealth? Proverbs 22, verse 9, and this is what Greg read this morning. Whoever has a bountiful eye will be blessed, for he shares bread with the poor. Speaking of being generous, if we are generous, we're sharing our wealth, our possessions, whatever God has blessed us with, we're willing to share. Maybe it's time for some of us. So in summary of a healthy eye, if we have a Christ focus on our life, in all parts of our life, our things, our time, how we view the world around us, how we see what's going on in the Middle East is an example. How we see that, we're going to see it through God's view. We are going to read and feel that differently than we would through a human lens. How we treat other people. A godly integrity could be another way of kind of summarizing a healthy eye. So we're going to look at a bad eye quickly as well. Evil and greedy. This is a complete contrast to a healthy eye. Completely the opposite. What is the opposite of generous? It's greedy. The Greek word here implies unhealthy. It implies stingy. And again, this comes from the Bible Project as well. They break down what does that mean. An evil eye in the ancient world was especially associated with greedy, envy, stinginess, and used in this context as material possessions. And that's coming from Jonathan Pemberton as well. Proverbs 28 shows the contrast between these two heart conditions. Describes a stingy person as having an evil eye. This term is common to Jesus' audience in his day. We maybe don't view that today and talk about that there as an evil eye, but to the audience today, that's what Jesus is talking about. And if you remember, eye, we mentioned earlier, that refers to our heart. So you could say a healthy heart versus an unhealthy heart. In Proverbs 28, it shows the contrast of this. Verse 5, it talks about evil men do not understand justice. But in contrary to that, but those who seek God understand it completely. Here again, Jesus is saying it's two completely different views. Verse 22, it talks about a stingy man hastes after wealth and does not know that poverty will come to him. Other parables that we could connect here. I'm just going to use them as a reference this morning. Is the rich man and Lazarus is an example, talking about how the rich man associated his wealth. The rich young ruler in Mark 10 as well, also someone who had a view on wealth that does not match with what Jesus is teaching here. The Good Samaritan story in Luke 10 is a good comparison of this, because it actually shows both examples. It shows someone who was not generous, and it shows someone who was generous with their time and money. The parable of the rich fool as well in Luke 12. Verse 15 of that text says, "And he said, take care and be on guard." Jesus is saying this here in regards to what happened to the rich fool. He says in verse 15, he summarizes it, and he says, "Take care and be on guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of his possessions." And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But just kind of to summarize this section on bad eye, it's a complete contrast to healthy eyes. It's a selfish, it's a short-sighted focus on our lives, thinking of ourselves, not others, like in Luke 12 on the rich fool, thinking of our success, what we have is because of what our own doing, and that it's for us to enjoy. So the next point I want to look at is, now we're going to go into, so if we have that healthy heart, unhealthy heart, what does that mean? In the end of verse 22, it says, if your eye is healthy, it says your whole body will be filled with light. This is a spiritual orientating towards God, intentionally directing our inner life, our hearts, our thoughts, our values, our desires and decisions towards God as our ultimate guide, purpose, and source of truth. It involves aligning our hearts and spirit with God's will and his presence. How does this look for us today? How does it look if our body is full of light? It's viewing the world as God sees it, both the good and the evil. It's how we react in hard times and in the good times. It's being a good neighbor, showing love to someone that is in need, like the Good Samaritan in Luke 10. It's caring and treating others like we want to be treated and expect to be treated. When we make mistakes, we want people to be lenient with us when we have hard times, but then are we in turn treating other people with that same type of treatment that we want to be given when we have hard times or make mistakes? It's being generous with everything that we have. It means having a proper attitude in our life, on our family, our health, security, our finances. And you could take this list and add to it whatever you want. That list can be long. In Matthew 5, 14 to 16, and again, don't have to turn to it, just want to highlight a couple points to hear. Jesus is teaching, this is going earlier on in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is teaching, let your light shine before others. And he ends later on in verse, I think it's in verse 16, that others may see and recognize the light in you as Christ, and they will give glory to your God, who is your Father, who is in heaven. It's an important part of the Christian life. A part that I fail at many times is letting my light shine in my life brightly so that others see that light and they recognize the source of that light. A healthy eye is filled with light when we are focused on eternal things, prioritizing Christ's kingdom over our own desires. We see things as God does, and our decisions and our lives are informed by him. So transitioning into verse 23, where it talks about, if your eye is bad, your whole body will be filled with darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? What Jesus is teaching about here is a spiritual disorientation, completely the opposite of light. It's a condition It's a condition or an experience that causes confusion, instability, and a loss of direction in our relationship with God, our understanding or our understanding of spiritual truth. This is where I went back to the original, the problem statement that I had mentioned when we started. This, to me, I think is something that maybe affects us more than we think about some days. I'm going to read, just like the people in Jesus' audience that day, we as well today have a disoriented spiritual view of power, world, and our possessions and our eternal focus. So I want you to think about that a little bit as we continue on through this section. What does that look like for us today? What does that mean? If the light in you is darkness. Jesus is saying this. He's talking to a group of people who had some understanding of this. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. I'm getting ahead of myself here. So this is a warning. What Jesus is saying here, light, by saying light in you is darkness, it's possible that we think we have light, wisdom, insight, spiritual vision, when in the reality of it is, we may be blind. We may not be having a true focus on what that true light is. When we see, when you believe that you see clearly, but you don't, your deception is far worse. Sorry. When you believe that you see clearly, but you don't, your deception is far worse. This isn't just about the obvious sins. It's about small deceitfulness, misaligned of your heart, not aligning 100% with what God's vision is, God's will. When we believe we're walking in God's light, but we compromise our vision, we're not just in darkness, we're in deep darkness. And that's what Jesus is teaching about. And if you look at the group of people that Jesus is teaching about, or teaching to in the Sermon on the Mount here, as well as there's other texts in the New Testament where Jesus is teaching to the audience, generally he's teaching to a group of people that were familiar with the Old Testament laws. They were familiar with the Torah, the prophets' writings. In fact, the audience was all waiting for a Messiah. When Jesus was teaching the Sermon on the Mount, as well as other times, the audience that was listening was waiting for the Messiah. So my question is how could many of them not recognize that Jesus was the Messiah? How did they miss that point? Could have it been because the light in their heart was actually darkness and they were not truly aligned with where God, with God's focus? Luke 11:35 is kind of it's Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount. He does it in a little different context, but there it talks about the same sentence here. Therefore, be careful lest the light in you is darkness. So it's just Luke's writing instead of Matthew's. But he's saying it as a warning that we need to be careful. We need to be aware of what that could do or what that could look like. Why is Jesus telling us? Why is he reminding us that this is important? Last Sunday, in our Sunday school lesson, we looked at John 9. This is the account where Jesus heals a man born blind. I'm not going to get into the details on that, really, but the whole fact is the Pharisees completely overlooked the fact that a man was healed. A man was made new. A man was made whole. They got caught up in the fact that Jesus did this on the Sabbath day. He did this. It didn't align with what they were thinking. It didn't align with what their expectations were. They missed the fact that Jesus created a miracle right in front of them to show them who he was, but they failed to see it. Today, are we recognizing Jesus as the Messiah? Are we willing to give up our entire lives to serve him and focus on what he wants? In Luke 11, 42 to 44, I'm going to try to go over this quickly because I still got quite a bit here, and I'll try to keep moving forward. But verse 42 of the account, this is when Jesus, so back this up a little bit. What Jesus is doing, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees here. He's talking to people who know the scriptures. In Luke 11, he's talking about them tithing. You tithe, but you do not love God. My takeaway here is what is our motive when we tithe, when we give? Do we think that we are giving and contributing the portion that goes to God? And then what do we do with the rest of our lives? It's not necessarily about a 10% tithe. It's about our attitudes about towards everything we have. Verse 43, Jesus also talks about the Pharisees craved honor and status and recognition. My point today is why are you doing what you're doing? Are you doing it for social status? Is that a driving factor behind the decisions and the choices that you are making this morning? And then the next point in this text where Jesus is teaching directly to the Pharisees, it talks about them, he compares them to being like unmarked graves, people walking over them without knowing. And in that context, in the Torah, it talked about if you came in contact with a grave, you were considered unclean. So the fact is, he compared the Pharisees to unmarked graves. So what that means is people would come in contact with a grave and not even realize it. Jesus is saying that the Pharisees are like that. They were teaching people and misleading them that people weren't even aware of it. So my takeaway for us today on this is, am I practicing holiness while hiding spiritual decay in my heart? Am I, like the Pharisees, influencing others in a misleading way with my life and my actions? When our hearts are clouded by sin, pride, false belief, our hearts will be filled with evil and greed. I want to use 2 Corinthians 4:4 to kind of summarize here. Paul is writing about the light of the gospel. And I'll read 2 Corinthians 4:4. In their case, the God of this world, referring to Satan, has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. We need to be aware of where the darkness is coming from, how it affects us. What is the source of darkness in the world around us, and what is the source in my own life? So I want to transition a little bit now into verse 24. Verse 24 is, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one, love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Verse 24, Jesus starts another way of explaining this. He talked about the treasure of your heart. He talks about light, darkness, and now he's talking about masters. You can't serve two different masters. Do we understand what this means to us today? Do we understand what Jesus is saying when he says you cannot serve two masters? Master implies ownership and authority. In this context, it's a master and a slave relationship. Jesus' audiences were very familiar with what master and slave relationship looked like. I don't think today we fully understand what that means or what that looks like. There's a few differences I'm going to point out, and I'm not going to get into the details on it, and I'm not trying to downplay the fact of what it means to be a slave. Today we would maybe associate a slave as being an employee, okay? There's a few differences. An employee today can have multiple jobs. You can have 2-3 jobs on the go at the same time. You can decide when to quit a job, when to start a new job. You can even make a decision to transition from maybe being the employee to an employer. That is not how it worked in a slave-master relationship. A slave was owned by their master, and their sole purpose was to serve the master, and that the master had complete control over them. They did not have a say in what happened. They could not quit or walk out. They could not ask for a pay raise. They were strictly there to serve the master. That is what Jesus is using here when he's comparing the difference between the two. For me today, the term slave often makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. And I think it's because I associate slavery with maybe stories that I've heard of the past. Maybe you talk about slavery to sin, also something that's not something pleasant to talk about. While Jesus is talking about this here, that we are all going to serve something, he's implying that we essentially are going to be a slave to something. And I guess while I'm saying there's the reason I feel uncomfortable, I think I associate myself with one of those two masters when I think of that, right? I associate myself with, I think of it, slavery as an unfair or evil master. While this is accurate about one of the masters you could serve, it's not accurate about this the other one. And that's what I want to make sure we think about this morning is there is two masters. Which one are you going to serve? And then what does that result look like? So this brings me to the point where I titled the message this morning is, Can You Serve Two Masters? I think if I were to go through here and take a poll this morning, I think we would all agree on that answer. That can you serve two masters? In the context of what we're talking about here, I think we all know the answer, right? But what I've actually done is I've asked that question to set up for the second question. And the second question is, do we at times try to blur the lines between the two masters? And I'll say that again. Do we at times try to blur the lines between serving two masters? Right? I don't think we agree we can't serve two masters. But do we try to blur that in society today, in our lives today, in how we see things, what in our pursuit of our time? I'm going to leave that for you to think about, and I encourage you to think and pray about that this week, is where in my life have I, or am I, blurring that line? In Romans 6, and I wish we could do it. I don't feel like I'm doing justice to all these verses and texts that I'm mentioning, because I think there's so much in the Bible that is tied in connection to what Jesus is teaching here. But I'm highlighting these verses, and I encourage you to go spend some time this week looking into it. In Romans 6, Paul uses the term slave to sin and slave to righteousness. In verse 16 of Romans 6, he says, You are a slave to one whom you obey, either of sin, which leads to death, or of obedience, which leads to righteousness. My point is there is no neutral ground in God's kingdom. What Jesus is trying to point out by summarizing this section of verses, really it's verses 19 through to the end of this verse 24. The key point in what Jesus is trying to summarize by saying, you cannot serve God and money. What he's saying is here, you can't serve both. There's no neutral ground. Some translations will use the word manna rather than money. The Greek meaning is wealth and riches. This gives a sense of what our society around us is pursuing: wealth, security, social status, health, freedom. The list could go on, and you could put whatever you want in that list. And what's important for us to understand is Jesus is not saying that these things are wrong. What Jesus is saying is, what is our attitude towards these things? What is driving you each day? What is driving you to get out of bed tomorrow morning? What is driving you to... You put that in whatever word or sentence you want, and you answer that question, is what is our attitude towards the things that is driving you then? So kind of summarizing this here, what is driving you? Remember, it's a heart condition behind what you are focusing on. That's really what's driving you. So it's a heart condition. What are you investing in? What are you focused on? Why are you doing what you're doing this morning? So my conclusion here is, what am I focusing on? What am I focusing on? And I think it's fair to say we all want to be whole. We all want to be complete. The only way we can get this is through the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the solution to what we're reading about, what Jesus is teaching about in this section, in really throughout the whole life of Jesus. Jesus is the light. The light of this world is Jesus. This is the gospel message to each one of us today. This is what's at the heart of the message. In John 3:21, declares, "But whoever does what is true comes to the light, so that it may be clearly seen that his works have been carried out by God." What I want to encourage you today and going forward this week is to really focus on what is in your heart. What is that light shining? Because we are shining out something. And I want you to spend time focusing on what that is. In a world filled with darkness and deception, Jesus is the only source of light, offering clarity, truth, and transformation. When we walk in his light, we no longer are relying on our limited understanding, but we are led by God's purpose, his strength, through the power of his Holy Spirit. His light exposes what is true, heals what is wounded, and brings our lives into complete alignment with what his perfect will is. That's my goal for each one of us this morning, is to focus on that and make that a reality in our lives. Can I have a closing song?